really neat to see some familiar faces. It's really cool. How many are here for the first time? Wow, amazing. That's wonderful. Hope you come back. So I am really delighted to come and tell you a story. And the story I want to tell you is called The Legend of the Weaver's Daughter. And it's a little bit long, so get comfortable and settle in. And I think it's really interesting to think about the world of ancient India, because the Buddha's view was that no matter who you were, you could awaken to the truth of the way things are. Didn't matter whether you were a Brahmin or a king or a queen or an outcast. And so this story is, I think, particularly powerful for us because we are not monastics. We don't live in a very structured environment that supports practice. It's really up to us to discover what our own practice will look like. And I'm sure you've been talking about that this week and exploring mindfulness in various ways. I met Harrison over at the study center, and he was talking about movement, and I thought that was so beautiful to think about how we can incorporate mindfulness into movement and expression. So, and this drum has anyone seen it? Some have seen it. It's, I'll just play you the scale. So it's an amazing instrument for a storyteller because I don't have to be particularly talented on percussion. I can just, and it makes these amazing sounds. And you can play the other side. So it's really neat. And so I'm going to use it just a bit at the beginning and the end of stories just to kind of evoke another landscape and also to tune us to listening, because I think the world of story invites us to listen in a different way. And you know that opening line in many stories, once upon a time. Well, in the Buddhist stories, it's often once in the past. Or when Brahmadatta was the king, reigning the kingdom in Banaras, the Bodhisatta was born as a whatever. So this will help us kind of get into the listening frame of mind. So here we go. Once in the past, in the town of Alavi in ancient India, a weaver's daughter heard the Buddha speak. She was 16. She was coming home from her father's workshop, a basket full of empty shuttles balanced on her head. Tall and graceful, she carried the basket easily as she threaded her way through the narrow streets, taking in all the sights and sounds and smells. At the city gates, she stopped to watch a pair of acrobats performing backflips and somersaults. They had no fear. And then along came the king's drummers. They struck their drum and called out the news of a festival. And there were the garland sellers. They knew the weaver's daughter well. She came by almost every day to admire the bright flower garlands and to smell their sweet scent. How skillfully they were woven. Pizzicatadite! She looked up. There were her friends, two sisters who were daughters of a neighbor. They laughed. They ran to greet her. Where are you going? She asked them. Haven't you heard? Said the older one. The teacher has come, the one they call the Buddha. The king has built a hall and a residence out by the shrine at Agalava. Won't you come with us? Said the younger one. Come and hear the teacher. Shyly, she slipped a warm brown hand into the hand of the weaver's daughter. Your work is done, is it not? Come and hear the teacher. The weaver's daughter agreed. Her father would not be home for many hours, and she could easily fill the shuttles by lamplight. Well, the three girls made their way from the city gates to the ancient shrine of Agalava, which stood in a grove of flowering trees. When they entered the hall, they could see a crowd of people sitting quietly, and there on a low platform sat the one they called the teacher. The weaver's daughter reached down her basket and set it by the door. She bowed and took a seat, one friend on either side. The Buddha was teaching on the practice of mindfulness of death, Marana Satim. He said to those assembled there, practice in this way. Remember, life is uncertain. Jivitang aduvang. Death is certain. Maranang duvang. This life of ours is not fixed. Aniyatang. Death is fixed. Niyatang. Practice and develop mindfulness of death. Those who do not develop this awareness, at the end of their lives, they are like those who are frightened at the sight of a terrible snake. They cry out with a cry and are done. But those who do practice and develop mindfulness of death, they are like the man who sees the snake from afar. His mind is upright and composed. He takes hold of a stick and tosses the snake aside. They have no fear. Nasantasanti. Well, where she was sitting in the hall, the weaver's daughter heard the wind come up outside, sweeping through the long hanging branches of the Udumbara trees. She felt a tremor of delight pass through her being. The whole world is trembling with joy. And then the Buddha continued. He said, call to mind these five recollections and let them serve you in developing mindfulness of death. I am subject to aging. I have not gone beyond aging. This is the first recollection. I am subject to illness. I have not gone beyond illness. This is the second recollection. I have not gone beyond death. I am also subject to death. This is the third recollection. Whatever is near and dear to me, from that I will be separated. This is the fourth recollection. I am the owner of my actions. Whatever actions I perform for good or ill, of that I will be the heir. This is the fifth recollection. Call these to mind and let them serve you in developing mindfulness of death, marana satyam. Well, the people were silent, and the Buddha was silent, and the teaching was finished. And the people rose and bowed and left the hall, stepping out under the trees and the darkening sky. But whatever impression that teaching of Dhamma had made upon their minds now drifted and scattered like petals in the wind. But the weaver's daughter collected her basket, and setting it on her head, she made a resolve. This teaching is wonderful indeed. I shall practice and develop mindfulness of death, marana satyam. Her friends ran ahead of her, chasing after the orange blossoms floating in the breeze and placing them in their hair. Well, at the end of the rainy season, the Buddha returned to Savatthi. But in that town of Alavi, for 3 years, the weaver's daughter practiced and developed mindfulness of death. There was a rhythm to her practice. There were ways she found of remembering. In the morning, when she knelt to light the fire to make her father's tea, she would say to herself, "Another day has dawned. I am subject to aging. I have not gone beyond aging." Well, even though she said the words out loud, it was hard to believe them. She was just 16. How easy it was to move her body at her age, to bend and lift the basket of shuttles and carry it through the streets. But she knew it would not always be so. She had seen the women in the marketplace, their bodies bent from years of carrying loads. "I am subject to aging." And when she dropped the fragrant leaves into the boiling water to make her father's tea, she would recall the second recollection. "I am subject to illness. I have not gone beyond illness." And she would remember the time when she was a small girl and both she and her mother fell ill with a fever. Her body seemed to be on fire. She begged her father to lift her in his arms, carry her to the river and let her be taken away in the cool stream. But he only pressed cold cloths against her arms and legs. He made her drink hot tea, and she recovered. And when she served her father the sweet rice porridge, the payasam, she would say to herself, "I am subject to death. I have not gone beyond death." And she would remember her mother. Her mother who used to crush the sugar, add spices, and bring her payasam. How still her mother had lain when the fever claimed her. The weaver's daughter had no strength to wail and lament. She could only lie there and watch. When the neighbors came and wrapped her mother in white cloth and bore her away to the cremation grounds. And when she came through the streets in the afternoon from her father's workshop, she would see the people going by. All the ladies in their fine saris, with their coal-rimmed eyes, leaving a scent of sandalwood as they went by. And she would say to herself, "Everyone I meet today will die." And when she came to the city gates and stopped to smell the flower garlands and watch the acrobats, she would say to herself, "All that is near and dear to me, everything, from that I will be separated." And at night when she lay down to sleep, she would review her day, each act of speech, each action, and ask herself, "Did I do harm? Did I bring less suffering into the world?" There was one day when she came to the city gates, when she heard the king's elephants. They were coming in a procession, and as she watched, the last of them, with a great sweep of its tail, knocked over the garland seller's cart, and all the garlands were scattered in the road. She set down her basket and hurried to help pick them up and shake them free of dust and replace them on the cart. Well, it only took a few moments, but the garland seller was so grateful, he gave her a garland. It was beautiful. It had a peacock feather, iridescent blue and green, woven among the jasmine. She wore it home and then set it on a branch of the negroda tree in the courtyard. I am the owner of my actions. Whatever actions I perform for good or ill, of that I will be the heir. And so it was for 3 years she practiced in this way, morning, noon, and night. And the result of her practice was that she grew alert, receptive to the world around her, and tender to everyone she met. Now, at the end of 3 years, in Savatthi, in Jetavana Monastery, one morning, the Buddha was surveying the world at dawn. And this weaver's daughter entered into his perception. And he said to himself, "This young woman, this daughter of a household, is ripe for understanding. I shall return to Alavi. I shall ask her 4 questions. She will answer, and by her answer clarify the meaning for herself and for others. Then I will speak a verse. And when I have spoken this verse, this young woman will become a sotapanna, a stream enterer. She will attain the first stage of awakening." And so the Buddha, with all the monks and nuns, traveled 10 days' journey, 30 yojanas, on the road from Savatthi to Alavi. And the news traveled through Alavi that the teacher had come once more to the shrine at Aglava. And the weaver's daughter heard the news. And she said to her father, "May I not go now to Aglava and hear the teacher? It has been 3 years since I have seen the teacher or heard the wonderful words of Dhamma. May I not go now directly?" But her father said, "A cloak is not yet finished. Fill the shuttles and bring them. Then you may go." And her father set off to his workshop. And the weaver's daughter reflected, "Why do I not go first to Aglava and hear the teacher and then return and fill the shuttles?" But then the thought arose in her mind, "If I do not fill the shuttles now and bring them, my father may become angry. My father may beat me. He may strike me." And so she sat down and began to fill the shuttles, carefully winding the thread so that it was neither too tight nor too loose, so that when her father threw the shuttle across the warp, it would not tangle. Meanwhile, at the shrine at Agalava, the people of Alavi had brought offerings. The Buddha and the monks and nuns had eaten. Water had been brought, and they were waiting for the Buddha to give the thanks offering, the teaching that was customary, at the end of a meal. But the Buddha sat silent, thinking to himself, "I have come 30 yojanas to see this weaver's daughter. She has not yet made an appearance. When she makes an appearance, then I will speak." And so the Buddha sat silent, and the people sat silent. But the weaver's daughter had finished loading the shuttles. She filled the basket, gathered it up, and set off for her father's workshop. But instead, she found herself on the path from the city gates to the shrine at Agalava. She entered the hall. There were all the people sitting quietly. There was the teacher on the platform. Why were they so quiet? Why was the Buddha not speaking? She came forward and stood at the edge of the throng. And the Buddha raised his head and saw her. The teacher is looking at me. And she realized, the teacher is waiting for me. And then she lifted down the basket and set it by the door. Why is the teacher waiting for me? But she made her way through the crowd of people seated there and came and bowed before the Buddha and took a seat to one side. And now the Buddha addressed her with the first question. He said, "Maiden, from where are you coming?" Well, the weaver's daughter, she did not hesitate. She said, "Bhante, I do not know." "Sadhu." "Maiden, where are you going?" Again, the weaver's daughter, she did not wait a moment. She answered with courage and confidence. She said, "Bhante, that also I do not know." And the people who were listening to this young woman, why, she couldn't be more than 19 years old, having this exchange with the Buddha, they said to each other, "This young weaver's daughter, when asked, 'From where are you coming?' why did she not say, 'From my father's house?' And when asked, 'Where are you going?' why did she not say, 'To my father's workshop?'" They began to mutter to each other, but the Buddha lifted a hand and bid them be silent. And then he continued, "Maiden," he said, "do you not know where you are going?" "Bhante, I do know," she said. It was the third question. And now he asked the fourth one. "Do you know?" "I do not." It was a wonderful riddle, but she knew the answers, and the people once more could not help themselves. How dare this young woman speak to the fully awakened Gotama Buddha in this way? But again, the Buddha silenced them and asked the maiden to explain. "Tell us, young woman, why have you answered my questions as you did?" "Bhante," she said, "when you asked me, 'From where are you coming?' you were asking me, 'From what life, from what realm am I born into this life? And this I do not know.' And when you asked me, 'Where are you going?' you were asking me, 'To what birth, to what life are you going when you die? And this also I do not know.'" "Sadhu." "Well spoken." "And Bhante," she continued, "when you said, 'Do you not know?' you were asking me, 'Did I not know the truth of death?' And yes, I do know the truth of death, but I do not know when, early or late, morning, noon or night, young or old. I do not know when my death will come." The Buddha nodded, and then he spoke this verse. "Andabutto ayam loko tanuketa vipassati sakunto jalamutto sagaya va'apo gacchatiti." Blind is this world. Few are those who see and understand the truth, like the bird who sets itself free from the hunter's net, who will seek and win release. And when she heard these words, the weaver's daughter felt a great settling within her, a faith, an unshakable faith, unwavering faith in the Buddha, in the Dhamma, and in the Sangha. And then she remembered her father and the cloak that was not yet finished. She rose and bowed with such gratitude and made her way through the people sitting there, collected her basket, and stepped out under the trees and the darkening sky, and hurried through the park. And all the world that came to her through her sense perception was so vivid and clear. At the city gates, she greeted her friends, the garland sellers. She could not stop, and as she made her way through the city, she felt the tenderness and the beauty of the world around her, the temple elephants dripping wet from their morning bath, the potters calling out their wares, the women in the marketplace laughing and telling stories, the crows in the banyan trees. And it came to her that there existed a stream of being, like an underground current or a deeply flowing river, that connected all living beings. She had seen glimmers and hints of it before, but now she was not separate. She had entered the stream. It was already afternoon when she came to her father's workshop. He had fallen asleep in the heat of the day, there on the bench before the loom. And when she came in from the brightness, she did not see that he was sleeping. She bent forward to give him the basket of shuttles. The basket knocked the edge of the loom and fell to the ground with a clatter. And at the sound, her father awoke and instantly remembered the cloak that was not yet finished. He stood up, grasped the top beam of the loom, pulled it forward and down, and it struck her on the breast. And she fell to the ground, Kalakatto, her time come. And when the weaver saw his daughter lying there, all covered in blood, he knew that she was dead. And he came weeping, weeping, into the presence of the teacher. And the Buddha said to him, "Weaver, you have already shed more tears over your death, over the death of your daughter, than there is water in the four great oceans. Grieve, weaver, but do not grieve forever, for there is no end or beginning to this round of birth and death." But as for the weaver's daughter, she was reborn in one of the heaven realms, the Tushita heaven. And this is said to be a fortunate birth, because there the Bodhisattva Maitreya, the future Buddha, resides. And every day she could go and listen to Dhamma and hear the teachings. And there you have it, the legend of the weaver's daughter. So let's just sit with that story for a moment. Thank you for listening. So that's what's called one of the Buddhist legends. And would you like maybe one more story? I know it's hot, but I could tell you a shorter story that's a good one about friendship And I think that on this retreat, that's certainly something you've been cultivating as friendship, I imagine. Is it true? Okay, so apologies to those who've heard this story several times. And usually I have someone who does nice sound effects with it, so you'll just have to imagine the sound effects. So once in the past, the Buddha-to-be, the Bodhisatta, was born as an antelope. He was sure and swift of foot, with warm dark eyes and two sharp pointed horns. He loved to wander and browse through the sunny glens and the shady paths of the forest where he made his home. But he lived in a thicket in the middle of the woods by a lake. Now, at the top of a tree by that very same lake, there lived a woodpecker, Satapatto. And in the lake there lived a turtle, Kachapo. The woodpecker, the turtle, and the antelope were friends. They lived together, and they took care of each other. How did they take care of each other? Well, they told each other stories. Now, the woodpecker's stories were short and to the point. They went da, 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 da. But the stories told by the turtle, you can imagine, they were slow and ponderous. They went on and on until sometimes the woodpecker and the antelope fell asleep. But the stories told by the Bodhisatta spoke of things he'd seen in the forest, creatures living their lives, killing at times to feed their families and teaching their young how to be in the world. And when the woodpecker and the turtle had heard one of the Bodhisatta's stories, they felt wiser and brighter and kinder. Now one day, a hunter entered the forest. He happened to see the hoofprints of the antelope in the soft earth at the edge of the lake, where the Bodhisatta came to drink each night. The hunter laid a snare. It was made of leather, but it was strong as an iron chain, and he went away. Well, that night, when the Bodhisatta came to drink, his hind leg was caught in the snare, and he cried out with the cry of one who is captured. And down from the tree flew the woodpecker, and out from the water of the lake climbed the turtle. They looked and saw their friend. Kurunga Miga was his name, trembling and frightened with his hind leg caught in the snare. "What can we do?" Satapatto looked at the turtle. He said, "Kachapo, you have a beak. Use your sharp-pointed beak to chew and cut this snare. I will fly through the woods and try to slow the hunter in his coming." So the turtle sat down and began to chew. Cuddity, cuddity, cuddity. Cuddity, cuddity, cuddity. And as he chewed, the antelope would murmur his name to encourage him. He said, "Kachapo, Kachapo, Kachapo." And meanwhile, the woodpecker flew through the woods, and the sound of his wings lifting and falling made a sound like his own name, Satapatto, 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 Satapatto. He came through the woods right to the hunter's lodge, where he alighted in a tree and waited for any sound of the hunter getting ready. Well, when light first showed in the east, he heard the hunter inside the lodge. The hunter had taken up his knife, slung his pouch over his shoulder, but when he opened the door and stepped through, down flew the woodpecker, flapped his wings, and struck the hunter in the face. The hunter was amazed. What was this black-winged bird of evil omen? He turned around and shut the door, and he lay down, because that was not a good way to start the day. And then he said to himself, "This bird struck me when I went through the front door. Now I'll go through the back door." But Sataputto had had the same thought and had flown to the other side of the forest lodge. And when the hunter stepped through a second time, down flew the woodpecker, flapped his wings, and struck the hunter again. The hunter was amazed. "This bird does not want me to set out." Again, he waited. But then he thought to himself, "There must be something in my leather snare." So knife in hand, pouch over one shoulder, and crouching low, he went quickly along the forest trails to that place by the edge of the lake. And Sataputto flew ahead of him. Sataputto, 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 Sataputto. He flew through the woods to warn the Bodhisatta, to warn the turtle. Well, all night long, Kachapo had cut and chewed the leather snare. His beak was bloody and broken. But there was only one thin strand that remained. And when Sataputto arrived, saying, "The hunter is coming, the hunter is coming," the Bodhisatta snapped the snare and went running along the trail. The woodpecker flew up to the tree. And when the hunter arrived, there was no antelope. There was a beautiful turtle. He picked up Kachapo and put him in his pouch and closed it tight. No antelope today, but this turtle would fetch a good price in the market. Kurunga Miga, the Bodhisatta going down the trail, looked back. He saw that his friend Kachapo had been seized. He said to himself, "I will save my friend." He came back a little ways. He half stumbled. He pretended to be injured, and he made sure that the hunter could see him. The hunter did see him. "This little antelope is weak. He must be injured. I will catch him easily." He unslung the pouch and set it down. A knife in hand, he followed as the Bodhisatta led him this way and that way on the forest trails, right to the other side of the lake, and then summoning his strength, he came leaping and jumping, swift as the wind, right back to that place where Kachapo was caught in the hunter's pouch. And crouching low, he pierced the pouch with his pointed horns, lifted it up, and let it fall. It split open, and out stepped the turtle. Then down flew Sataputto. And the Bodhisatta spoke to them. He said, "Kachapo, Sataputto, my friends, you have done for me what ought to be done by a friend. You have given me my life. Now quickly, before the hunter returns, Sataputto, take your young ones, fly through the woods to safety. And you, Sataputto, hide, Kachapo, hide in the water of the lake, where the hunter will not see you. And I will run and hide in the thicket." They each went their separate ways. And when the hunter returned, there on the forest floor, he read the story of their friendship. "This snare has been cut and chewed. Here is blood. Could it be that the turtle used its pointed beak to cut the snare and release his friend? And these hoof prints, are they the hoof prints of the antelope coming back? And this pouch, it has been broken and torn. Did the antelope pierce it with its sharp pointed horns? And this wing feather, does it belong to that bird that struck me this very morning?" He picked up the torn pouch, the broken snare, and the wing feather. He was a little disappointed, somewhat discouraged, but as he set off, he was hoping that next time he might catch some creatures who didn't have such good friends. Kurunga Miga Jataka. And there you have it. again. So, you're very welcome. It's a treat.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.